First, it's no secret that the proportion of Americans who marry has gone down in recent decades. But something that's newer is the demographic leading the shift away from marriage. Just decades ago, Americans without college degrees were much more likely to be married, but that's no longer the case. Victor Tan Shen is with us now. He's an assistant professor of sociology at Virginia Commonwealth University, and he's the author of two books, including Cut Loose, Jobless and Hopeless in an Unfair Economy, and his latest piece is called America, Home of the Transactional Marriage. He joins us now from WCVE in Richmond, Virginia. Victor, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, Veronica.
Well, the U.S. is seeing a rise in what you call transactional marriage. Can you describe what you mean by that term?
Sure. So marriage rates, as you noted, have gone down. What we see now is the driving force that is making the change between college-educated households and working-class households, those with a high school degree or less, is the scarcity of good jobs out there that working-class people find it hard to get the types of jobs that paid good wages, that had benefits, you know, these unionized factory jobs of the past. And so what is happening is there's a lot of strain, financial strain, on certain households in this country. And as a result, decisions to stay together, to start a family or so on, are really being pushed by these kinds of economic forces that families at the lower end of the educational spectrum have become much more fragile, much less likely to get together to start a family in a marital bond.
And we've been seeing this trend for a while of declining marriages. Can you tell us a little more about who is and who isn't getting marriage and how big that difference between the two groups is?
Sure. So in 1990, you had a situation where those with more education, with college degrees, were more likely to be unmarried. Those who just had a high school degree or less were more likely to be married. And now, since 2008, that has flipped around. And, you know, just give you one stat, among women in their early 40s, half of those women who just have a high school degree are married, compared to three quarters of those women who are college grads, right? So there's this substantial difference that has opened up, and it's been driven by educational differences. And, you know, it plays into this larger picture, Veronica, where, you know, obviously the culture has changed, right? People are more accepting of not marrying, of having kids outside of marriage. But what has happened in the last few decades is this class divide opening up. And a big part of that story is decline of good jobs for those with less education. Because, you know, families to stay together, that's a big part of the equation, right? How much can you contribute, especially at a time when you need two earners in a household, right, to kind of stay afloat. The lack of a good earner or having a spouse who is unemployed, that's not as tenable as it was when you could get by with just one earner.
Or I suppose if you're one of these men you're talking about in a position of having less education, looking for one of those jobs that used to be there, like manufacturing, that would be a decent wage maybe for your life. If you're there now, don't have a job, it's probably hard to reach out to someone to date and get married and find a partner who's willing to maybe overlook that unemployment.
Yeah, I think to some extent it's always been the case that men in particular have to have that steady living in order to attract a mate, to get married and so on. But In some ways, it has gotten harder because our economy has shifted in certain ways. You know, I mentioned the kind of blue-collar factory jobs that have been disappearing over the last several decades. You know, those paid well. They had good benefits. They were often unionized. The kinds of jobs that have replaced them, you know, tend to pay very little. They have erratic schedules, and people have to cobble together enough hours to support themselves. It's a very different landscape for those with less education. And, you know, Veronica, this is not a insignificant segment of the population. You know, two-thirds of Americans 25 and older do not have a bachelor's degree. So we have to keep that in mind, that a large segment of the population are struggling, and they're struggling economically, and that bleeds over into their family relationships as well.
And we should talk about how, as you look at this phenomenon of the transactional marriage, you looked a lot at men and focused on them as a part, a big part of what was driving the shift. Why look at men more than at women's wages and women's jobs, for instance?
Yeah, I think in this day and age, you know, we, to our credit, think in more equitable terms about marriages and who should be contributing to the marriage. That said, if you look at the data, if you look, and here I'm thinking about a study by David Otter at MIT and some collaborators, where they looked at the impact of job loss in various communities across the country and what impact that job loss, which was from Chinese imports, what effect that had on marriage rates and childbirth within marriage rates. And they found that when industries were hit hard that tended to have lots of male workers, well, marriage declined and childbirth within marriage declined. But when industries that had large numbers of women were hit hard, the opposite happened for some reason, that you know, marriage rates actually increased. And so there's this component of these traditional norms that are still lingering within our society, where men are expected to still be you know, breadwinners. Still, their masculinity is linked to their ability to provide, and we can think of that as unfair, but that is how a lot of Americans think of this. That said, you know, right now, women are 4 out of every 10 primary breadwinners in this country, right? They've definitely stepped up in terms of providing financially. And when you ask men what they're looking for in a marriage partner, you know, almost half of them say that they want a spouse, a woman with a steady job. So it is changing, perhaps, these norms. But still, if you look at the patterns out there, it's very influenced by gender roles.
And you take this all a step further and look at the policy aspect of this and how a public safety net could affect marriage rates within sort of this phenomenon that you're describing. And I wonder if you could tell us a story. You tell this in your piece of a Canadian man who's unemployed, and he decides that he's going to commit suicide. He goes and he's going to step in front of a truck. Would you tell us what happens next?
Sure. So this man who used to work in a auto plant in Ontario, right across the river from Detroit, he grew depressed after he lost his job. It was part of his identity. You know, that was a central, you know, part of who he was and had been for such a long time. And it really hurt him not being able to help his wife and his teenage daughter out. He felt useless, he told me. And so he almost committed suicide. He didn't go through with it. He didn't jump in front of a truck as he had planned to do. And he went home and he, you know, talked things out with his wife. He tried to get therapy, and eventually, you know, things worked out for him in part because of some assistance from a government-funded training center staffed by some of his former coworkers. It was partly because he had tuition paid for him to go back to school and have his unemployment benefits extended. These kinds of support gave him a sense of meaning that it that he had identity as a student, for one thing, that it wasn't all down to him in order to pull in that paycheck and feel useful again. So, I mean, that's not the entire picture. Obviously, in every single relationship, there's a mixture of emotional, psychological, and financial considerations. But when we look at the broader trends, when we sociologists understand what's going on with marriage, that plays a role, right? How much support you have in terms of providing for your family and picking up the pieces after a job loss, that matters. That could really play into the equation of whether people stay together after a job loss.
We're exploring right now how jobs and labor markets have shaped American relationships. Our guest is Victor Tan Chen, assistant professor of sociology at Virginia Commonwealth University. And we want to hear from you. Has the loss of a job or the decline of available jobs affected your relationship? Is unemployment stopping you from thinking about marriage, or maybe it's causing a strain in your current marriage? You can give us a call and share your story at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up our conversation in a little bit here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our conversation now about how the loss of good jobs, good blue-collar jobs, has affected relationships. Victor Tan Chen is with us. He's an assistant professor of sociology at Virginia Commonwealth University. And he's the author of the piece, America, Home of the Transactional Marriage, in The Atlantic magazine. And we'd love to hear from you. Has unemployment ended or maybe strained your relationship? Have you decided not to be with someone because of your employment status or maybe because of your partner's? You can let us know by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll take our first caller now. We've got Aaron with us in Madison. Aaron, hi.
Hi, Veronica.
Hi, what did you want to share?
Hi, I'm a divorcee. I'm 32. I have a great job, and so does my boyfriend, but we've chosen not to get married just because of the strain of finances and, just being in and out of jobs. We just chose to not be, like, what am I trying to say, in competition, I guess, is what you can say.
Maybe.
So we have a happy relationship, and we've just chosen not to get married, but we're very happy just being two breadwinners on our own.
Aaron, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate you sharing your story today. And Victor, when you hear that story, it sounds as though Aaron and her significant other are happy not being married. I think she's kind of implying that the way the economy is, one of them might have a job offer and want to move, and the other might need to follow a different direction for his or her job. And so this makes things a little easier. Is this maybe reflective of the way that our economy ebbs and flows and the way people move around to follow the jobs?
Sure. I think Aaron raises a really good point about, there's other options out there. And as you were saying, it's partly economic, partly about flexibility, partly cultural, too, that we accept that people won't get married. That's totally fine. I guess the one of the issues here is that, and I think Aaron's comment alludes to this, is that in America still, marriage is seen as an ideal. It's kind of like the culmination of your life's work, in the sense of being an individualist, being someone who's out for success and trying to advance oneself and so on. So we don't require marriage, we don't require it even, for having a child. It's less stigmatized to do that. But at the same time, it's an ideal. You could see that in Hollywood, how, this soulmate kind of ideal that one has to find that perfect person. That is something that a lot of Americans no longer can achieve because they can't find that perfect person because so many people do not have opportunities in this economy, and therefore they're not really good investments for that long-term commitment. So we have this kind of conflict in this country, Veronica, where we have this culture, this ideal of marriage, and yet we have this economy that is so divided and so disadvantaged. You know, so some segments are so disadvantaged within this economy that it's hard for them to start a family.
And we were talking a little bit about how public policy affects what we're seeing in terms of marriage rates, and I wonder how important you found a social safety net is when it comes to supporting a marriage when times do get tough. And you looked at Canada and the United States. What have you seen there?
Yeah, I should note that Canada and the United States are not dramatically different in the ways that parts of Europe are to the United States. But they do have a stronger safety net. They have policies in place, more extensive unemployment benefits, but also, you know, benefits for parents who have kids, regardless of their marital status. It's more generous. In fact, it very recently, last year, that kind of those child benefits were expanded there. And so that kind of support, it changes, it nudges people in a certain direction in terms of their, even in terms of the romantic relationships, right? You have more security knowing that there's some help out there. And it plays into our decisions as Americans. You know, you kind of, if you are a working class person and don't have such great job prospects, well, you definitely need to find a partner who can pull his or her weight, right? It's so essential to have that kind of partnership in place. And so you probably wouldn't want to take the risk with someone who doesn't fit those standards. And so I think that is, you know, part of this calculation, which is different in other countries, not just culturally, but also in terms of what is the amount of how great is the risk for you as an individual in the labor market, but also in the marriage market.
Right, and I think there's in your piece, you talked about how there's some evidence that when the social safety net is really robust, that may also encourage people not to get married because they have so much freedom and financial security that maybe they have the opportunity not to get married.
Yeah. It's always a question, Veronica, of, you know, to what extent are these differences due to different cultures and to what extent are they due to policy or to the state of the economy or so on? You know, in Europe, cohabitation, where you have a live-in partner who is not married to you, that's much more common in many parts of Europe. And in fact, it takes a form that's pretty similar to marriage here in the United States. You know, it tends to be longer term, tends to be more stable than is the case here with our live-in arrangements, right? So, you know, part of that might be a cultural difference. But looking at the U.S. situation and looking at the role of policy, there's also this debate, you know, over whether the social safety net, the size of it, discourages or encourages marriage. And, you know, that debate is very contentious politically. I should say, though, that, you know, the size of benefits in the United States declined over a period of time. This is welfare benefits and other benefits. Decline adjusted for inflation over a period of time in the last century, in the latter part of the last century, and when that was a period of time when we saw those rates of childbirth outside of marriage and marriage increasing and marriage rates plummeting. So I have my doubts about this argument that a safety net would necessarily discourage marriage. So in fact, I find that in my own research, that having that kind of support helps keep families from falling apart because they have more of a sense of security and it's not so fraught with this anxiety over how to make ends meet.
Got a comment here on Facebook from Catherine who says, honestly, the only reason I got married was strictly financial. My husband and I used to joke about it being a green card-like marriage. We had to get married to be able to get insurance together and save money because we didn't want to pay for separate insurance costs. So there's a practical look at marriage. He said that's the driving factor there. Is that something that you're seeing, that it, the transactional marriage in action there with Catherine?
Yeah, I don't want to give the impression that, you know, everyone, when we're deciding to get married, are just thinking about pocketbook issues, or, you know, are just focused on dollar bills. You know, obviously there's so much at work here, and hopefully, primarily, it's probably emotional connection and things like that. But, you know, those things do factor in, and it nudges people in certain directions in terms of their personal decisions. So things like, you know, health insurance, the fact that we don't have universal health insurance and it's so tied to who your employer is, you know, you could see that changing or at least factoring into people's decisions about whether to get married or not. So I think that we need to take that seriously. And if in terms of explaining why working class people are marrying less, I think the economy has a lot to do with that.
Is there an indication, as we wrap up, Victor, that some of the people you write about, working class people, blue collar people who might have gotten those older manufacturing jobs, they would like to get married, but that is the primary obstacle is money?
Yeah, I think, and especially for the men, to be honest, and, you know, we were talking about gender roles before, but for a lot of them, you know, it's a sense of their own manhood has been lost when they lose their job, when they lose a good job that was a dignified job that, you know, paid the bills and allowed for some stability in their lives and potentially in their partner's life. So, you know, we have this stigma about, you know, the so-called deadbeat dad or the scrub who can't, you know, provide and so on. And I think that has a disproportionate impact on those who are not doing so well in this economy.
Victor, thank you so much for joining us. We have to leave it there. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Victor Tanshen is assistant professor of sociology at Virginia Commonwealth University, joined us to talk about how employment and unemployment have changed the idea of marriage.